Introduce yourself, please.
My name's Tim DeWeese. I'm the director of Johnson County Mental Health Center.
We have a lot of important things to talk about with you today, but first we're going to hear the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
Joining Tim and me in the KCUR 89.3 production studio today is Jim McLean, who runs the KHI News Service, a KCUR reporting partner. Jim, always good to have you here in the discussion.
Always good to be with you, Sam.
Going to tackle the issue of funding mental health services in Kansas, so I'm going to dispense with some of what we like to ask on State House Blend. But Tim, I want to start with you telling me about the agency, how big, how many folks, what services do you offer?
Sure. We're a community mental health center that covers Johnson County, Kansas, and we have a staff of about 334 staff.
Wow.
Our budget's roughly $29 million, and we serve about 10,000 residents each year. And when we look at the services that we provide, it's a full array of services from emergency services to specifically adult services, children and family services. So if you have a mental health disorder, a severe mental illness, we'll provide you services here in Johnson County.
There's a lot of discussion, a lot of problems with mental health service delivery in Kansas. I want to get to a lot of those. Specifically, I'm interested to hear about how mental health issues play into law enforcement. There's a little news recently about that. But before we get to any of that, I want to start with Jim and see what's on your mind.
I've done some reporting with Tim. I've interviewed Tim a couple of times, and this is a very important issue in the state. It's one of the biggest health issues in the state, quite frankly, about the cohesiveness of the mental health system in the state and how the community mental health centers, the CMHCs, work with the state hospitals. And there have been some real problems in that regard. Of course, everybody listening probably knows about the problems at the Osawatomie State Hospital just south of here. So I'm eager to get to that discussion.
So where are we with fixing those problems, specifically at Osawatomie, Tim?
Well, with Osawatomie State Hospital, I think right now they're talking about that the CMS inspectors or certifiers are supposed to be back within the next couple of weeks to reassess the facility. It's still decertified. It's still at a capacity of 146 beds, which it was previously at 206. And so on any given day, you have about 10 people from across the state that are in need of hospitalization that can't get in. So, for example, here in Johnson County, we have three people that are on the waiting list. Two of those have been identified by the court that needing to be hospitalized, and the other two needed hospitalization, but were put in jail as opposed to taken to the hospital.
And just for a little context here, Sam, this is really important because in order to be committed to the state hospital under the current kind of emergency rules, you have to be considered a danger either to yourself or others. You have to meet that criteria. And because of what happened was there were a lot of things over the last several years that happened at Osawatomie where it was the federal inspectors deemed that it was unsafe for several reasons. And there was a sexual assault of a worker by a patient there. And then the federal government in late 2015 decertified the place so it no longer qualifies for Medicare money from the federal government. And so what the state has now been doing is they've been renovating the facility and they've been taking care of staffing issues. They've had horrible staffing issues there and hope to get it recertified, as Tim said, at the end of the month. But in the meantime, because of the reduced capacity, This issue of people waiting to get in has become a huge issue. And just the other day at the State House, I mean, somebody here in Johnson County, Tim, I don't think it was yours, it was testified that in the first 4 months of 2015, a large hospital in Johnson County, this is a regular hospital, not a mental health hospital, has had to keep people with mental health issues for a total of 318 hours waiting to get into Osawatomie. The longest wait was 23 hours, like for almost a full day. So hospitals across the state are having to retrofit their emergency rooms with beds to keep people with mental health issues who are literally just waiting to get into the state hospital. So there is a real capacity issue in this state right now, a lot of which is related to funding.
And I think that one of the pieces about that is I met with the sheriff, the Johnson County Sheriff, yesterday, in fact, and their biggest concern.
This is Frank Denning, the outgoing sheriff.
And we met with him, and basically the big concern is that for those individuals that don't make it to the ER, for example, if they come in contact with someone and say they kick the police officer because the police officer is trying to help them get into services and there's no place for them, they'll end up doing a charge. They'll charge them with assault of an LEO and they'll go to jail. And so
we call this the criminalization of mental health.
Right. So right now we have four
law enforcement officers.
So right now we have four people in the Johnson County Jail that are in need of state hospitalization involuntarily, and we are on a waiting list to get them in.
You know, Frank Denning will often say that the Johnson County Jail is the largest provider of mental health services in Kansas. I don't know if he's exaggerating, but there is a lot of...
That's actually the state prison system, but Johnson County wouldn't be far behind.
Would be pretty big on that. And so there's been some movement about from the county trying to help local police departments when they encounter somebody who might have a mental health problem. So, so tell me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. There's two ways that we've done that. The first was really to help train officers. And there is a group called the Kansas CIT Council, and CIT stands for Crisis Intervention Training. And that training is for law enforcement officers basically to understand how to identify and how to best address and help in a situation where they come in contact with someone who appears to have some sort of behavioral health issue. And so as those individuals, they can be identified because they all wear a CIT pin next on their uniform. And now we have CIT officers across Johnson County. I think there's nearly 400 plus officers trained in CIT. And so family members now can even call and say, you know, here's a situation. Could you please send a CIT officer? And if there's one on at that point in time, that's who'll get sent out. So we looked at that and we said, okay, so how can we even improve upon that? And so what we came up with was this idea to do a co-responder program.
And this is relatively new.
It's new. And so we first started, we applied for a federal grant, partnered with the city of Olathe, and we had the first co-responder in Olathe. And what that does is it takes a licensed mental health professional, and embeds them into the police department. And so now the CIT officer and this licensed mental health professional respond together in those cases. And in many of the situations, we can dispose of the situation or resolve the situation without having to have the person be placed in custody, without having to take them to the ER. It gets them connected immediately to the mental health center since that's our staff. Mm-hmm. And so this has been really effective. The cities have found such value in it that when the grant ran out in Olathe, the city of Olathe has since committed for the last 2 years to pay for those for that position out of its own funds. And so now the city of Overland Park has a co-responder. We have just signed a contract with the cities of Lenexa and Shawnee, which they're sharing the cost of a co-responder. And most recently, just signed an agreement with nine cities in the northeast part of Johnson County where they'll all share a co-responder. So this is just one more way that we have tried to better provide access to individuals in emergent situations that have to have behavioral health
services. And this is a really good issue, Sam, because it's really important. I'm glad you described that in such detail, because what this brings up, again, is the issue that, yes, you might be able to do that in Johnson County with the tax base and with some of those communities and where there's a commitment to do this kind of innovative work. But it's a very uneven system across the state. And a lot of counties, a lot of communities simply do not have the wherewithal to even contemplate a program like that.
Right. I mean, if you got down into southeast Kansas, Bourbon County, Cherokee County, I mean, this is a much heavier lift for them to fund such a program, wouldn't we think?
Oh, absolutely. And not only that, but you get down in some regions, rural areas of the state, you know, and there's been a lot made of a lot of the health research recently about life expectancy actually going down among some populations in this mm-hmm. country, where the trend has always been increasing because of opiate use and a lot of other things. And so you have these issues now in some of these rural areas that are really manifest and are crippling to cultures and communities and need to be dealt with. And yet there's not a systematic kind of a coordinated approach to addressing them. I mean, yes, you're doing these innovative things in Johnson
Good
County, but the
here.
Point made, yeah, it's needed elsewhere, and there doesn't seem to be a statewide blueprint for how to think about delivering those same kind of services everywhere.
I'm curious, is there not a statewide blueprint, or is there not the wherewithal, or just the need and caring on the part of state officials to provide it?
It's all those things.
Really?
The governor has a mental health advisory task force that has made some very innovative recommendations, but they stop. They live on paper, but they never get implemented because it's a resource issue, and because there's nobody leading the strategic implementation effort to educate lawmakers and to work through the policy apparatus to get this stuff done, so that you have a lot of. You have people like Tim, and you have other very innovative things going on at the community mental health centers across the state, but you guys have lost $30 million in funding in just the last 12 months because of policy decisions made at the state on the health home issue and some other things. And so it really is getting harder for community mental health centers in places in Johnson County here too, but also those in counties with lower tax bases to really just do the basics anymore because of funding issues.
Right. I think that's the key is that in Johnson County, we have continued to be able to provide some quality care, and we've been able to do some innovative things. But that's because I think our community understands.
Our
county has stepped up. So they provide, they just passed the 2017 budget, and we'll be receiving another $4.6 million in over the course of now through 2017, which really just replaces money that we've lost through Medicaid cuts and state cuts. And so unlike other places in the state where, their counties aren't able to step up, their cities, in the case of the co-responders, those are all funded by city tax funds. And so we are in a place because our communities understand the importance that we're able to do this. The impact still within the mental health center is that if you look at, I said early on that we had 334 staff, that's 114 less than it was in 2008. So we still have had a drastic reduction in our services and in the size of our organization. We have just been able to utilize those tax dollars from our county to be able to maintain a relative level of support and services to individuals in this community.
I'm going to talk about Medicaid expansion in a second, but as I hear you talk, Tim, I'm wondering, one, do you think you've got a partner with the state of Kansas in trying to tackle some of these issues? And I'm also wondering, a few years ago, has that changed? Did you think you had a good partnership with the state, and where is that now?
Yeah, I think that when we look at the history of the mental health system in Kansas, we got to a point roughly 2008 where I think we saw our highest level of support financially. I think that we were recognized not only across the state, but around our neighboring states and nationally as being a pretty progressive mental health system, doing a lot of good things, helping people live their lives in the community and in a good quality of life. And what I like to say is that since that time, since that 2008 to 2010 time to now, what we've seen is policy decisions that have systematically dismantled the public mental health system. And that that has been the problem that we're faced with right now.
Yeah. If I could just give you a tiny bit of context here, Sam, there was a change in thinking in terms of how best to deal with mental illness In the early 60s, President Kennedy proposed the Community Mental Health Center Act, which is what created a lot of these community mental health centers across the country. And the objective, the policy objective, was to get people out of what were known as mental health asylums at the time and allow them to continue to reside in their communities and be functional with the help of these community mental health centers. So the deinstitutionalization effort started then. And so what happened was then, in the early 1990s, Kansas passed a very big mental health reform bill that was designed to accelerate and fully implement this community transition to community mental health. And for a while, as Tim mentioned, there was a real fidelity and a real commitment to making that transition work, which is why we saw the closure of a state mental health hospital in Topeka as a result, because the beds were no longer needed. But what has, and then starting with the recession of 2008, mm-hmm. even when Governor Sebelius was in, the funding cuts started, again, because there were recessionary pressures. But if I'm not mistaken, Tim, the way I understand it is the funding now for the CMHCs still has not reached the level that it was prior to the recession.
That's right? Absolutely correct.
So we're losing ground and have been losing ground partially due to a recession, which nobody had any control over, but more recently because of policy decisions made at the state level.
Right. But, Tim, I just want to go back and just and ask you again, do you feel like you're in partnership with the state, or do you think you've been abandoned?
No, I think that in many cases, I think there's abandon is probably the best word. That I think that's probably how a lot of our clients feel. I think that's a lot of how the providers feel across the state. You know, I think that there has been continual turnover within the state and within KDADS that you haven't even had someone there long enough to be able to develop a relationship. You know, I do feel positive about the new secretary, right. Secretary Keck. He was a part of our meeting yesterday. I do feel good about that, and hopefully we'll be able to develop a relationship with him. But over the course of the last several years, it just seems like there has been a constant turnover and policy decision after policy decision that's been made that have had a negative impact overall on our client and on the system that's there to serve our clients.
And again, a lot of this being driven by the state's budget problems. I mean, the mental health centers were part of the recent 4% cut in CanCare/Medicaid reimbursement rates. And I would echo that. I mean, I think it's important that Tim mentioned Secretary Tim Keck, the Kansas Department for Aging and Disability Services. He's relatively new there. He just moved from an interim to a permanent status as secretary. And, you know, he got high marks from the Legislative Oversight Committee the other day for the work that he's done in a fairly short amount of time to move the issue along at Osawatomie and the work he's trying to do out at the Larned State Hospital, which also has significant staffing problems.
Yeah, I just want to, just before I move on very quickly, this meeting that you mentioned with him, was this just a get-to-know-you meeting or was there something specific you were discussing?
No, this was specifically discussing and just talking about how we could get a better idea about the issues at Osawatomie, how quickly we think some of those beds would be brought back online. And I think he expressed a desire to have those beds back online by the end of the year. I don't know if we'll get back up to 206 by then. But the pressure really is, at this point in time, is a lack of capacity at the state hospital and in being able to get people into the state hospital when we need to. That's one issue. The other issue is then just the amount of financial support that has been reduced over the years that has resulted in layoffs in some mental health centers, in service reductions in others, and just be able to look at how we can develop a solid plan moving forward. Because like you asked a minute ago, there really is, in my opinion, no real plan as to how to best address the mental health
and
issues within
system.
Kansas.
Yeah. So the whole idea of that 1990 reform bill, too, was the money saved by closing down state hospitals was supposed to flow to the communities. It did for a while. It doesn't anymore.
Right. So the secretary in this meeting has committed to trying to bring more beds online by the end of the year and staff up?
Absolutely. And in fact, he reported to us that, in fact, they have hired and getting closer to the full staffing levels that they need. It will take some time to get those individuals trained up. And then I think that's when they'll begin to slowly bring on or reopen some of those beds. But, you know, he expressed that his desire, of course, he can't make any promises because it's a difficult situation. But his plan is to slowly bring those new employees on, train them, and then start to open some beds up so that we can have some relief, at least in the state hospital system, by the end of the year.
And staffing has been a huge issue at Osawatomie and Lawn at both. Mm-hmm. The state has had a lot of trouble recruiting staff for various reasons, working conditions and else. And it was in the series of stories that we did recently on Osawatomie, you had staff members there who were being asked to work double shifts without much notice. And then they were cutting back on staff and people weren't making the security rounds that they were supposed to, which led to the sexual assault. So, but Secretary Keck does seem to be committed to tackling that staffing problem aggressively, but it's also a huge problem out at Larned.
Yeah. I want to move on to Medicaid expansion, just throw it out there. I'm going to assume that that you guys agree that expanding Medicaid could be a big solution to this problem.
Well, I don't know if I would, you know, I don't think I'm in a position to agree or disagree. What I would say is that, particularly with community mental health centers, and Tim can expound on this, but an awful lot of the people, they're like hospitals. People who show up for treatment there get treatment regardless of whether they can pay. Now, that treatment can sometimes be triaged when you have staff, when you have financial problems. But Medicaid expansion, it's been shown, a lot of the people that are presenting for treatment who don't have insurance, who don't have any kind of coverage and can't pay, would be covered under the Medicaid expansion proposal because it really specifically targets adults below about 138% of poverty. And so I think it would go a long way, expansion would go a long way to helping helping the finances of these community mental health centers across the state.
Yeah, the state of Kansas has some of the most restrictive Medicaid requirements across the board. And so if you look, and I like to put it in the framework of with here in Johnson County, is last year, Johnson County Mental Health Center provided something around $6 million in charitable care. $6 million in charitable care. If Medicaid was expanded, $3.1 million of that would go away. So in essence, we have a situation where in Johnson County, our county taxpayers are footing the bill when we realistically could have those federal dollars coming into Johnson County and supplementing that so that we're getting $3.1 additional million dollars to serve those
individuals. And with Medicaid expansion, initially, we've missed this window, but initially, states that expanded Medicaid, 100% of the bill for those, the expansion population was paid by the federal government. That's now expired, and it slowly ratchets down, but will drop no lower than 90%. Typical Medicaid match from the federal government is around 40%. So 90% of the cost of covering this additional population would be borne by the federal government over time.
I think it's clear the complexion of the Kansas legislature is going to change when they reconvene in January. So do we think that Medicaid expansion has got a shot now?
We just did a story on that. The people who are advocating for expansion say yes, they think they have the numbers to pass an expansion plan in both houses. But it still appears that Governor Brownback might veto that if it should land on his desk.
Yeah. You optimistic, Tim?
You know, I think that was the best description. I'm optimistic. I'm concerned that it will get to the point where it could get vetoed. I think that, you know, my experience is while I think we've seen in the 20 years that I've worked in community mental health is that when you see a shift in that political environment, so we've seen a shift more to the middle, and I think we'll probably see that again in November. The problem is that the policy that follows still takes a couple years. So what I'm telling my staff and the way I'm preparing is that we still have another 2 years of wow. Difficult time to kind of wade through before we can see any of those real policies taking effect that may be in place. And I think that the start of that is to have an understanding of what we want the mental health system in Kansas to look like, and that's going to take partnering with community mental health centers. It's going to take partnering with our local universities that have been a part of this for years, and develop a good a plan of what those services need to look like.
All right, I'm going to wrap it up here, but Jim, I want to give you the last question or last thought here for Tim DeWeese.
Well, Tim, I think we've kind of come back to this central point a couple of times that, yes, funding is a huge issue, but what also seems to be an issue in Kansas is the lack of an overarching kind of strategic plan, as you said, for what the mental health system should look like. You've expressed some confidence in Secretary Keck. Do you think Secretary Keck might take up that cause if enough of you suggested it to him, and do something that is not only just kind of a task force on paper, that but could be meaningful in terms of producing a plan to follow should the resources become available?
I think that I do have hope in that area. I think that, yesterday in meeting him for the first time, we exchanged our cards and basically my hope is that within the next few weeks I can have him come visit our community mental health center and have that very discussion with him. But I think it is really it seems that he has a genuine desire to take care of the Kansans that need this service and that are most at risk, and so we'll go there and start to have those discussions and dialogues and hopefully come up with a good plan that actually can move forward, and we hope that the money follows that.
Gentlemen, we leave it there. Jim McLean, KHI News Service. You always make this podcast a little better.
Thanks, Sam. I'm always glad to help. And this is a good discussion, Tim. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Tim DeWeese, while we have changed the State House Blend format a little for our issue show today, the one thing we will not do is let you get away without picking our walk-off music. What song is in your head, my friend?
It's going to be, let's go with Stay Ahead of the Wolves by locals Bob Walking Horse and Jeff Porter.
A local band? We couldn't be happier. State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, find us on kcur.org/statehouseblend, and our friends over there at UpToDate clear out some room for us Tuesdays at 11 a.m. You a fan of the Twitter? I bet you are. Follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. My co-host, Brian Ellison, who keeps track of the Michigoss over there in Missouri. You can follow him at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. See you around the radio.
Never been one to look back, trying to cover my tracks, to regret or undo what I've done.